Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and, you know, an instrument has yet to be invented to measure my indifference to the news that dear leader Trump is returning to Michigan next week. The man found liable for penetrating a woman against her will. I mean, you know, she couldn't tell if it were his fingers or his member. Ugh. The multi-divorced, twice impeached, the man who told us to inject disinfectant into ourselves to fight COVID, and the man facing 88 different criminal indictments is apparently showing up to a rally at an airplane hangar in Freeland next week. First of all, what a lazy, lazy, lazy clown dear leader is. I mean, he flies into airports so that he can walk as few steps as possible, gives a rambling, incoherent speech for over an hour, hops back onto his plane and leaves. I mean, it is very, very low energy. Although he is sleeping a lot at his New York City trial because, you know, Gramps needs his rest there. But I will say, this Michigan trip is a little different than dear leader's trip last fall when he showed his support for striking UAW workers by, yes, speaking at a non-union automotive parts manufacturer and supplier in Macomb County. That's really showing that you love the working class there, dear leader. I mean, I gave him credit, too, though, for showing a vast and glaring difference between him and President Biden. I mean, Biden actually stood on the picket lines with striking UAW workers, while dear leader showed his disdain for UAW workers by speaking at a non-union business. However, it's on brand for Republicans and their dear leader who have spent years trying to destroy the middle class by destroying unions. And it worked for a good many of years. I mean, let's be honest, right? It had. It worked, unfortunately. But now, with the big UAW victory in Tennessee and another victory on the horizon at a Mercedes plant in Alabama, the tide could be turning into the union's favor, which is a win for all working Americans. More on that in my last call after my interview with columnist at Salon.com, Amanda Marcotte. You know, I've been looking forward to having Amanda on this podcast for quite some time because she has covered so much when it comes to the Christian nationalist movement, or the white Christian nationalist movement, as I call it, when it comes to issues like defunding public schools, defunding libraries, attacking the nation's democratic institutions, attacking abortion rights and women's health care, and how this movement is trying to end, that's right, you heard me, end religious liberty in this country. She'll join me here in just a moment. You know, one part about the white Christian nationalist movement and how it believes it needs dear leader back in power so that it can do what it believes to be as God's work is that it always needs white womanhood to help promote the white Christian nationalist agenda, which is white male domination over everything. Now, the movement needs some white women to be its spokesperson to do God's calling for their men. And we saw that example happen this week when Fox News' Lawrence Jones talked with this Trump supporter, wrapped in a Trump flag, by the way, from Allendale, Michigan. Here, listen what she had to say.
We were talking about the former president being under prosecution right now. What do you make of it? Do you think that is fair?
No, I don't think it's fair. It's ridiculous. They're just trying to keep him busy so he can't run.
You were telling me yesterday that as you thought about the case and you were watching about what was going on in New York, that it brought you to tears. Why is that?
Tears, because we need Trump back or else we're going to lose our country. We're going to lose our country. And it just, and what's happening with these protesters is heartbreaking. It's history happening all over again, and they don't understand how bad it could get or will get if we don't get Trump back in.
The cult always needs victimized white women to do its talking. Special thanks to Decoding Fox News for sharing that on X. And as Decoding Fox News stated, the woman there was wrapped in a Trump flag at 6:19 a.m. in the morning, which is what perfectly normal people do at a diner around that time of day, right? It is a cult. Now, I assume she was talking about the protests happening on college campuses across the country, including at the University of Michigan, against Israel's bombardment of the Gaza Strip, which has killed over 30,000 Palestinians, many of them children. I'm seeing all these right-wingers denouncing the free speech rights of these protesters, and House Speaker Mike Johnson brought his fellow fascist Republicans to Columbia University to denounce the protesters against Israel's continued slaughter of the Palestinian people. Mass graves are being uncovered over there, but all Republicans and the MAGA cult care about are what's happening on college campuses, or that's the only thing they want you caring about. But wait a second. I thought colleges and universities didn't believe in free speech. I mean, the right wing has pounded its fist on the table for years demanding free speech at colleges and universities. Oh, wait, where are they now? Where are you? By the way, Michigan Advance's Michi economist and friend of this podcast, Rick Haglund, posted this tweet. Says, seems like it wasn't that long ago that some complain college students today lacked the social activism of their baby boomer parents and were concerned only about getting a degree or a good job. That's not a bad one, Rick. Not bad at all. Now, these same people are the ones telling students to shut up. But getting back to that dear leader supporter from Allendale, she truly believes that the country is in utter chaos despite all the evidence showing otherwise, with a growing economy, a drop in violent crime, higher wages, victories for unions, and on and on. I mean, the Biden Transportation Department scored a major blow to the monopolized airline industry by requiring airlines to automatically issue cash refunds for things like delayed flights and to better disclose fees for baggage or canceling a reservation. The Transportation Department said that airlines will be required to provide automatic cash refunds within a few days for canceled flights and significant delays, according to the Associated Press. I mean, that's a perfect example right there of fighting on behalf of customers, on fighting on behalf of the working class, and not always standing with management and corporations. You think dear leader would have done that? Do you? Do you really? And I have a feeling if you told that dear leader follower that was on Fox News there, I bet you if you told her that dear leader was the one who set those new rules, not Biden, she'd believe it and she'd celebrate it. But if Biden does it, oh, it's bad. It's a cult. And it believes its side is the one to win. Its side is the only one that should win, which proves to me that this was never about economics. It was about the small minority having dominion over those of us they deemed to be non-believers in their extreme religious views. Which is why I keep bringing up how abortion will play a major factor in this race again, despite what pundits may believe. Well, I'm not the only one bringing it up. I mean, the fascist white Christian nationalists, it's them who keep bringing it up over and over and over again. We've seen draconian anti-abortion care laws pop up in Florida, and we saw Republicans in Arizona applaud a restoration of a complete abortion ban from the 19th century when Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday were in the middle of the showdown at the OK Corral. And this week, another hearing on abortion rights happened in front of the Supreme Court, where Idaho enacted a strict abortion ban where there's no exception for the health of the mother. Now, this Idaho law conflicts with a federal statute that requires all hospitals provide treatment for any condition that could put the patient's life in serious jeopardy or impair their bodily organs. But it sounds like the five right-wing male justices are all about finding ways, or more ways, to punish women while showing more care for a fetus that has zero chance of viability. It's all about dehumanizing the woman while giving the fetus more power, which is what we saw happen in that embryo case in Alabama a few months ago. Now, if this case is decided in favor of Idaho, then watch out. This will only further embolden Christian nationalist prosecutors across the country to go after doctors and, yes, to go after women. Now, in Michigan, some bills passed through a state house committee recently which would allow pharmacists to issue prescriptions for certain hormonal contraceptives, such as birth control pills or hormonal contraceptive patches. And these bills would also require health insurance policies to cover prescriptions for these contraceptives. Also, insurance companies would have to cover 12 months worth of a prescription at once rather than having to fill it out once a month. You see, Michigan Democrats continue to show how much they value women and families by passing such laws designed to make the system, you know, a bit more fair for working people. But all those gains that Michigan has made and continues to make on abortion rights and reproductive care could vanish just like that if Dear Leader is brought back into power. You think he won't enact a national abortion ban if he's back in power? Really? I mean, that's the danger facing this country, and it's led by a white Christian nationalist movement, a fascist white Christian nationalist movement. Amanda Marcotte from Salon joins me in just a moment to talk more about this. You're listening to LOL.
You're listening to Left of Lansing. If the podcast isn't enough and you are in need of more Pat, follow him on Twitter and like him on Facebook. Also, don't forget, you can read more of his thoughts and hear an archive of past episodes on leftoflansing.com.
That's right. Don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com, not just because that's where I put a full archive of all my episodes and the Left of Lansing Friday shorts, but where you can also get my takes on other things happening across the state and nationally, which are not included in this podcast. Again, that's leftoflansing.com. And thanks to my good friend Rich for getting Left of Lansing off the ground. Okay. I've been looking forward to speaking to one of my favorite writers when it comes to national politics, and I'm elated that she's taking some time here to talk with me here this week. Amanda Marcotte is the senior politics writer at Salon and author of Troll Nation, How the Right Became Trump-Worshipping Monsters Set on Rat-Effing Liberals, America, and Truth Itself. She's been covering a lot also on the Christian nationalist movement and how it's taking over the Republican Party and the consequences such a movement could have on the entire country if it indeed gets power that we're already seeing it wield in some states. So Amanda, thank you so very much for joining me here this week on Left of Lansing. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, before we talk about some of your recent work on this movement that you've been writing on Salon, let's first talk about your book. What is Troll Nation all about? And what did you learn while writing about it?
So I wrote that book in 2017, basically right, started it very shortly after the election. And basically, like, my thesis was that Donald Trump was a symptom of a larger problem in the Republican Party, which is that they have lost all the like policy arguments functionally. Like, they've lost on certainly on things like the social safety net, tax rates, labor, environment, but they've also lost the argument on, I think, you know, what we call identity politics issues, right? Like women's rights, racism, LGBTQ issues, things like that. And having basically lost, like, their views are on all these issues are unpopular. They don't have much place to go. So they've just turned into nihilistic trolls. Like, Donald Trump is a symptom of people who realize that they cannot win by argument. So instead, they're going to just be very destructive and at best win by force. And if they can't do that, then they're going to just burn it all down.
So then everything, you said you wrote that back in 2017. So then you pretty much did see what was going to happen in 2020 in a way, maybe not to an insurrection at the Capitol, but you could see something like that kind of movement, what it would turn into.
Yeah. And months before the election happened, I was part of a group of journalists and activists who were repeatedly warning that he was going to try to steal this election. We were ignored. You know, it was very clear to me that he was going to try to steal it. It became clear to me after the election that they were going to try to use violence to steal it. I live here in Philadelphia, and I went to an event that Rudy Giuliani and Eric Trump had early, just a few days after, while they were still counting votes here in Philly. And it was very clear that they were hoping they could whip up a mob to storm the convention center to stop the vote counting. They failed because a group of Philadelphians met them and way outnumbered the MAGA people that showed up. Like, by like 20 to 1, right? So that whole incident just sort of got lost in the shuffle. But it was clear to me then that this was on the platter, like that somehow they were ready to use violence if they could thought they could get away with it.
Right. And, you know, Amanda, we just passed the 4-year anniversary when protests were happening at the Lansing State Capitol. And that's when we had some, like, I don't know, 3,000 people show up with guns and some with Confederate flags, of course, to show their disdain over Gretchen Whitmer's stay-at-home orders during a pandemic, you know, a pandemic which killed thousands here in the state and, of course, thousands across the country. So, yeah, that would anger so many people trying to save lives, I know. But, you know, it did serve, I think, as a precursor to the January 6th insurrection months later. And you've written about the use of violent rhetoric and the promotion of violent rhetoric and how it's constantly used by the right wing, so much so that it's become a normal occurrence. It's gotten to the point that, you know, we can't be surprised when violence from the right does happen because they've been told over and over it's okay and, you know, it's to be celebrated, which I guess leads me to my question. We have to expect that something is going to happen this election. It may not be another insurrection at the Capitol in Washington, D.C., but it could be something else, maybe something more on a local level.
Yeah, I agree. What's funny is I have an article coming out about why nothing is happening around the courthouse. And I think in Manhattan, even though Trump is basically out there begging MAGA to like show up, and I think that it can be easy to get complacent about this because we're like, people treat this violence as like an on-off switch, right? Like he calls for it, it's not happening, clearly they're over it. And I don't think that's true. I think it's just mostly they don't see the value in rioting at the Manhattan courthouse. Like what would that achieve, right?
Yeah.
But if you think about it from that point of view, you can really start to see things they could do that we should be worried about, like attacking election offices, right, attacking election officials. Again, there were efforts during the 2020 election to stop the vote counting and they just all failed. We can expect that to all happen again, perhaps even worse. And people in swing states should be on high alert.
You know, I worked in, and while I'm thinking about it, this extreme rhetoric, it's not like this is a new phenomenon. There were many times I remember some Democrats, some liberals, some on the left thinking that Donald Trump was some kind of, I don't know, an anomaly. But he really wasn't. Through my years in corporate right-wing talk radio, I can tell you the language that Trump was using was the exact same kind of language that I've been hearing in right-wing radio for many, many years. What Donald Trump knew how to do was just use that rhetoric, and he was able to stir up enough support and a strong enough base.
Yeah, I mean, he gave Rush Limbaugh the Medal of Honor, right?
Yep.
Like, that's hanging a lampshade on it.
Yeah, that is a good way to put it. I'm speaking with Amanda Marcotte from Salon here this week. All right, Amanda, in your column just after Easter that was featured on Salon, it was titled "Fake Right-Wing Panic About Trans Easter is Part of Trump's Push for Christian Nationalism." You argued how that fake outrage in the right-wing media world was to push one goal and one goal only, to end religious liberty in America. And, you know, I didn't think about it that way, but that was a really excellent point. What made you come up with that conclusion after witnessing how the right-wing media machine claimed a moral outrage when the Biden administration acknowledged Transgender Day of Visibility, which just happened to land this year on the same day of Easter? I'm just wondering how you were able to come to that conclusion.
Yeah, I mean, this is something I've been on about forever and ever because I came up as like a reproductive rights journalist. And it was very frustrating to me during the Obama years when like they started to trot out this argument that somehow denying women access to abortion, denying women access to contraception, denying trans people health care, just like denying is somehow religious liberty. And their argument is basically that their religious liberty depends on being able to force you to live by their religious rules. And I'm like, well, that just seems like a religious oppression to me, not religious liberty. It is exactly the opposite of what you're calling it. You know, I think there's a tendency to not think about the right to get an abortion or use contraception or be gay or whatever as religious liberty. These things tend to be framed as like reproductive rights, gay rights, but they are also a matter of religious liberty, which is to say, I have a First Amendment right to decide what I believe, and I believe that these things are good. I believe that reproductive rights and gay rights are good and that people should be free to live how they want. I reject your religious arguments, and they are religious, about what people's sexuality should look like. And I really wish the left would do more of pointing out that this is some Orwellian nonsense that the right frames what is literally religious oppression, literally them trying to force other people to live by their rules as religious liberty, because it's the opposite. You know, if a pharmacist can deny me my contraception, like they're making my choices for me according to their religious doctrines. This is very straightforward.
Right. And that's always been the ultimate goal of the Christian nationalist movement, right? I mean, that's why it attached itself to the Republican Party years and years ago. I mean, its ultimate goal is to end religious freedom for everybody else while simultaneously arguing that they are for religious freedom.
Yeah, I mean, and it's becoming really clear, like with the Easter thing, what you're seeing is this is a classic fascist two-step, right? They claim to be the victims of something and then therefore say that fascism is the only answer to the oppression they supposedly face. So, you know, there's this kind of like stance they take, like, gosh, you know, we did try to live with you secularist, Satanist, pagan freakazoids. We tried to live in peace, but then you put your trans day on our Easter, and that's so unforgivable of a transgression that I guess we're just going to have to take away your religious liberty now. Sorry, you did it to yourselves. And it's like, no. But I mean, this is everyone who wants to like oppress, beat, hurt other people always thinks of themselves as the victim and justified in their violence, right down from somebody who beats a child to, yeah, like a politician who is passing these like oppressive, you know, anti-humanist laws. But I don't think the mainstream media should like give it any traction. I think we need to call this out over and over and over.
Are you trying to tell me that victimization is always like at the top of the playbook for the right wing? That's shocking. You know, one more point that hit me over that fake Easter outrage on the right wing was the still photo that you used in that column from Fox News where the Chiron said inclusiveness over holiness. But that phrase on that Chiron that day really puzzled me because Fox News was saying out loud to them, Christianity isn't an inclusive religion, which was outrageous since, you know, Jesus was kind of always about being inclusive. At least I thought he was. But Fox was pretty much saying, no, Christianity is not inclusive. I don't know. That's something I just caught in that photo that you posted.
Yeah. And on the flip side, they're saying that Christianity cannot be part of inclusiveness. Like, yeah. By definition, for instance, if we have an inclusive society, that means you can be Christian, you can be Muslim, you can be atheist, you can worship the flying spaghetti monster. No one cares. All are allowed. Right.
Right.
But they don't want to play like that. They don't want to have to share rights with other people. They feel like they're the only people who deserve them. And so they're basically asserting straightforward that Christianity must be dominant and everyone else has to give up their rights because and then they can't actually explain why this completely unfair thing they're arguing is justified. So instead they scream and yell and pretend to be victims to distract you.
I recently spoke with, her name was Dr. Sarah Mosliner. She lectures in the Department of Philosophy, Anthropology, and Religion at Central Michigan University, has written some books on Christian nationalism. And she told me here on the podcast that arguments for slavery back in the Civil War used the exact same texts that are now being used against gender equality. That was a very interesting point. And she said, while the two experiences obviously are not the same, the arguments in support of the hierarchy of white supremacist patriarchy draw on the same biblical teachings. And I thought that was an excellent point, the point being that what is past is prologue, I suppose. So it's all part of the same game for the Christian nationalist movement, isn't it? That they are the rightful rulers, I guess you could say, of this country. And even though I think they know that Trump is not one of them, they still see him as their chance to do, in their eyes, God's work.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I don't think that the use of a liberal Christian friend of mine calls those clobber verses. I was like, I love that phrase. The use of like biblical clobber verses is, again, another way to argue without arguing, right? Like, right. Okay, fine. Even if you do believe your Bible says that because you're white, you're better than everybody else, or because you're male, you're better than women or whatever. So I don't believe your Bible, and I have a right to not believe that. You know, we don't even have to do the whole thing where we get competing Bible verses, though you can find them. It is them just trying, like, they want to be the most important people, the most privileged, the most powerful people. And that desire is what they cannot justify, but they are definitely going to fight for it. And so, I mean, I think at the end of the day, it is as simple as that, is authoritarianism and fascism kind of come in where persuasion fails, right? When they're functionally admitting, we know that we can't persuade you to let Christians be dominant over all other people. We can't persuade you that women exist as a servant class for men. We can't persuade you. So we're just going to force you. And we're just going to try to be post evidence, post arguments, post facts, right?
Since you just brought this up, I kind of want to piggyback on it, because Dr. Mosner, she also brought up another point, which I'd assume you'd agree with. And she said the words white womanhood helps promote the white Christian nationalist agenda of white male dominion over everything. And white women, while they won't necessarily benefit from this movement, they believe that they'll gain great advantages for their work. Would you kind of agree with that overall feeling, that in a way that this movement, they kind of rely on women in general, but we could narrow it down to white women to kind of be, you know, spokespeople for their movement, to sort of give it more, in their eyes, legitimacy towards the masses?
Yeah, I mean, this has been a weapon of the reactionary right forever and ever and ever. Like, even in the 19th century, she's a historian, so she probably could give recite you chapter and verse how this happened. Saying white womanhood is not the same thing as saying all white women. And I think we need to not be defensive about that. It's the idea of white womanhood, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of been leveraged by patriarchal society to justify, to kind of like dress up oppression as protecting women and saving women. So, you know, Donald Trump's got a real ham-fisted version of this, right? Where he always runs around yelling and screaming about how he protects women, by which he means he protects white women from largely imaginary threats of sexual violence at the hands of like men of color, right? He's very blunt about this. Meanwhile, he actually sexually assaults women. He for real does it. It's not just the thing that he says, a lot of his imaginary rapes he talks about on the stump speech. He actually assaulted E. Jean Carroll in a dressing room. He actually has over 24 women have reported sexual assaults that he's committed against them. And I think that just sort of tells the entire story of how this goes, which is like white women are told that if they just kind of comply with this whole system, they'll be given special privileges and protections. And because overturning patriarchy isn't going to happen in a day or a generation, it can feel easier to just believe that promise and just sort of be submissive and helpful to male dominance instead of resist it. Because if you resist it, like, you're thrown out of the tribe entirely. And I get that. And I understand why people do that, even though it's wrong and bad. But also, I have to point out examples like Donald Trump. It doesn't even protect you at the end of the day.
Right. And I think that's why some progressives, Amanda, get depressed, because it doesn't matter what that guy does, the Christian nationalist movement is going to stick with him because they see him as sort of a vessel to reach their end goals.
They don't care because, I mean, I think part of the problem, and this is always going to be a part of a thing that like the left has to contend with, is that it is true that our society has always been unfair, has always been unequal. And therefore, there's no way for things to get more equal without the people on top feeling like they're losing something. Just like if I had $100 and you had $0 and we decided that we needed to be equal and I had to give you $50, well, I'm out $50, you know?
Right.
Like, I'm not going to like that. And that's just a reality that we have to contend with. Meanwhile, like, it's a little harder to get people to understand what all the benefits of equality, because it hasn't happened yet. Right. And so I think there's a lot of emotion on the right because they can't really work with logic. But I think it is important to remember like where that emotion is coming from and why they just spiral into these. I mean, I think we're all kind of alarmed at the rise of the MAGA movement because it's not just that it's so terrible. It's just that they've lost the plot. Like these folks seem like they're melting down. Like they've really lost control of themselves, you know?
Is that it, though? Do you think it's because they feel like that things in this country are just going in such a way and that they have lost control, whether it could be socially, like we've been kind of concentrating here with the Christian nationalist movement, or economically? And so this is the route that they've chosen to go down. I mean, I guess we see this happening in other parts around the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think mostly socially, right? Economically, most of the country is actually doing pretty well right now, mm-hmm. all things considered. I mean, obviously, we could be doing a lot better, but compared to where we were a few years ago.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We're seeing like a real meltdown, I think, from people that it's important to understand. Like I often joke that MAGA is like a support group for mediocre white people. I think I really do mean that because I think it's important to understand that like if you are just kind of like a mediocre or just a regular person, and what's made you special your whole life is something that you were just born with, like white skin, you're male, whatever. You've just been granted this like elevated status just because of how you came out. To have that taken away is often to have, for people that don't have like anything else that they feel like they're super special about, like can be very ego bruising, I think. And I think Trump is obviously a perfect avatar for this because he has no redeemable qualities, right? He's not good at anything. He's not smart. He's not good as a person. Like there's nothing valuable about him as a human being whatsoever. So all he's ever had is his privilege. And so of course he's in a complete meltdown panic at the idea that someone would question that, because without that, he's literally nothing.
As you know, we enshrined abortion rights here in Michigan through a ballot referendum back in 2022. And then a Democratic majority passed laws nullifying an outright abortion ban from 1931. It was a zombie law, but Democrats just wanted it vanquished from the books just in case, as we might be seeing, you know, happening in Arizona. And then the Democratic majority here, they passed laws repealing Republican passed trap laws, which put onerous demands on abortion providers. They also reversed the law that forced women to have to buy an insurance rider for an abortion in case they were raped or assaulted. So in Michigan here, we've made some significant strides when it comes to abortion rights and reproductive rights. But those strides could just vanish like that if a nationwide abortion ban happens. The Supreme Court, I think, is sort of showing their side, especially the right wing of the Supreme Court is showing their side. Hey, there's this thing, there's this law from the 19th century. If you kind of want to push that, we may be able to use that in the future. So that's why I've been arguing, unlike so many of the pundits out there who may want to try to say that abortion, oh, it's yesterday's issue, it's not going to be a major issue this election. I think it is going to be a major issue no matter what.
I think that people need to really understand the law that you're talking about. The Comstock Act is from 1873, I do believe. Like Arizona shows, they will bring back zombie laws. And the Comstock Act doesn't just ban abortion. It would functionally be a national ban on pornography, contraception, stuff like that, right? Now, there are other Supreme Court decisions that haven't been repealed that would kind of limit right now how that could legally happen. But if Donald Trump starts enforcing the Comstock Act to prevent people from getting an abortion, it basically would be a backdoor ban, right? It would make it illegal for anybody to ship anything you can use for an abortion, and not just abortion pills. Like if a medical supplier, for instance, was selling medicine or supplies to an abortion clinic in a blue state, they could also be prosecuted for that. Yeah. If he starts to do that, then obviously the next step is for the right to say, well, if we're enforcing part of the law, why not all of it? And then they start bringing up lawsuits to get the Supreme Court to weigh in on that, on contraception and pornography. And Clarence Thomas has already signaled that he would be very eager to revisit this issue. So this is not a small thing. And the thing is, like, there's all these lawyers who have this theory that Donald Trump can just do it with like a signature on an executive order. And whether or not he can or the Supreme Court allows that, he's going to try. And think about it, this is the same Supreme Court that overturned Roe. So we're in a scary situation.
He would try because he would feel like he's got nothing to lose to keep his base. That would make them happy. So it's not like anybody would try to stop him. The Supreme Court would be on his side.
Yeah. And think about this. I think a lot of people are like, well, he's not really anti-abortion. And I'm like, well, yeah, in the abstract, he doesn't care about abortion per se, but he hates women.
Yes.
And he said that he's going to make this his retribution term. And you know who didn't vote for him in large numbers and will not vote for him in large numbers again? Women of reproductive age.
Right.
He's going to hate women under 40 so much, he's going to just be take all their rights.
And that's why I said in my original question to you that I feel you get all these sage pundits out there who are like, oh, that could be a big issue. That's so 2022. No, it's going to be an issue, especially in states like Arizona and in Florida. I've got to believe. So that's going to have some kind of outcome with the election.
I think that we're going to definitely see in states like Arizona that like, women's vote is going to matter a lot because we've just seen women turning out. Women vote more than men to begin with, and the abortion issue is really motivating, and it's going to be motivating in a lot of swing states. I think, you know, I'm sure in Michigan, Whitmer is going to make it very clear to voters in your state that the abortion rights that you just secured are contingent, like you said. And so,
oh yeah, and she already is. Yeah, she's already doing that.
So it's going to be a big deal.
All right. One final question here, Amanda Marcotte. I've heard you use the F word twice here during this talk, the F word meaning fascism, of course. Do you think that the Democratic Party should do a better job at saying that word, or Democrats just in general, I don't care, or progressives? Do you think that we are losing the messaging war by not saying fascism? Because that's essentially what this whole movement, this Christian nationalist movement, really is. It's not essentially, it is a fascist movement. I call it fascism here on this podcast. Do you think enough people on our side are calling it that so that way others and maybe even like independent voters may see it that way as well?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you can quibble this one to death, I think, but I always recommend to people read Umberto Eco's essay about sort of the 14 signposts of fascism, and he lived through it, so he would know. And what you'll find is that basically all of them describe the MAGA movement to a T. And one of the things that he says that is really important to understand is fascism is like less like an articulated ideology and much more like kind of an ethos. I think that gels with my understanding of things because as like I wrote in my book and I write over and over, like, I think what we are seeing on the American right is like a real collapse of articulated ideology because none of the things they believe have passed the stress test of being debated, worked out in policy, like voted on by a democratic public, et cetera, et cetera. Having failed to actually prove their arguments true and often proving themselves false, all they have left now is this kind of garbled mess of shut up and we're going to make you, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that in a lot of ways, that's all fascism is. It's less an elaborate ideology and more just I think what did Orwell call it, like a boot on someone's neck forever.
Right. And that is what we're up against here in this country. And that's what we're up against here this coming election. And there's so much more I wanted to ask you, but our time is up. Amanda Marcotte, senior politics writer at Salon.com. Thanks so much for being on here this week. I enjoyed our talk. And I'll make sure to link to your book, your page at Salon, and people can sign up for your newsletter as well, right?
Yeah, go to salon.com/newsletter. Mine is called Standing Room Only.
Outstanding. Well, Amanda, thank you so much. And I'd love to have you back again sometime soon, if that's all right with you.
This has been great. Thanks for having me.
It's progressivism with passion. It's the Left of Lansing podcast, where Pat shines a light on Michigan's progressive movement. Contact Pat at leftoflansing@gmail.com.
Awesome talk there with Amanda Marcotte, and a privilege to have her on this week. Amanda's earned many, many accolades and achievements throughout her storied career, but I'm certain that being a guest on Michigan's premier progressive podcast ranks up there for her. At least I like to think so. I'll leave a link to her archive of columns with Salon along with this week's episode on leftoflansing.com. You know, there was something that Amanda said early on in that interview, and it's when she said that the right wing cannot compete with policies because they don't really have any popular policies to offer to people. And one of those unpopular policies is how driven they are and how driven they've always been through the years at destroying unions, destroying our working class. But that pendulum is starting to swing, and that's what I'd like to talk about in this week's Left of Lansing Last Call. So if you recall, I spoke with Paula Gardner from Bridge Magazine a few weeks ago on corporate subsidies and how the hundreds of millions that we've thrown at manufacturers haven't really paid off as they promised. As Ms. Gardner told us, 40% of jobs created from those subsidies pay less than the state's average, and nearly 90% of incentives fund only manufacturing jobs. That's it. And this really went into hyperdrive in 2021 when Ford decided to build some EV battery plants in Tennessee and Kentucky. The state legislature here, which at the time was run by a Republican majority, joined hands with many Democrats, including Governor Whitmer, and created the Strategic Outreach and Attraction Reserve Fund, or better known as the SOAR Fund. Now, the legislature pumped millions and millions into that fund, as well as other tax-funded entities to help what many thought was needed to lure companies here in Michigan. Knowing that that system has never worked, Democrats, who now own the majority in the state legislature, are trying to right some of the wrongs of all those corporate subsidies. Senate Democrats last month passed some corporate incentive reform bills in which more money will be diverted towards investing into the communities where these businesses will be, rather than just handing everything over to corporations. And that point is being driven home more by the news this past week of GM moving its headquarters from Detroit's Renaissance Center to the new Hudson's Building owned by multi-billionaire Dan Gilbert. Gilbert's bedrock commercial real estate firm, according to Bridge Detroit, received a $60 million tax incentive for this new Hudson's Building. And in return, the new building was supposed to bring home all kinds of investments and all kinds of jobs. Well, guess what? Not the case. Due to this move by GM, Bridge Detroit says, and I quote, "Supporters of the tax break insisted at the time that the Hudson site would create 2,000 new jobs and net $71 million in new city tax revenue from the additional workers. But Detroit will not see a net gain in new jobs or local tax revenue for the estimated 850 GM rented employees. It simply moves existing jobs from one building to another, which will create or generate no new tax revenue for the city. This reduces Bedrock's projected new job creation total to 1,150 and its new income tax impact by 43%, which means the Hudson's Detroit site could now, at best, generate about $52 million in new tax revenue. Three economists who reviewed the analysis called it fair but conservative and said that the project will likely create very little, if any, net positive tax revenue. When are we going to learn? Well, hence, the Senate Democrats in the state passed some much-needed reforms to this sham that is corporate welfare. I mean, don't you just love how so many in the investment gang lament about socialism, but yet enjoy so many aspects of socialism for themselves? Meanwhile, they tell hardworking Michiganders, hey, work harder for less. Well, Michigan Republicans decided not to join in the Senate Democrats' efforts, which is no surprise, but they did say they are willing to join in the game of finding ways to put greater oversight on corporate subsidies, which, you know, I'll give them credit where credit is due. Doesn't take much, I guess, but, you know, greater oversight is for sure needed. Now, Republicans used to always be for these corporate handouts before they were against them once a Democrat became governor, and that's not lost on anybody. Still, I think all of us agree that the subsidies are not working as promised and greater oversight is needed. However, Michigan Republicans just couldn't stop there. In their list of demands, along with stronger oversight for subsidies, Republicans are going back to their old, tired playbook of ideas of hurting hardworking families by demanding, yes, a restoration of right to work, which the Democratic majority swiftly nullified last year. Right to Work for Less was a gift to the rich elite DeVos family donor base designed to destroy Michigan's strong history of being a union state. And what kind of economic gains did it really give us? I mean, Ford still chose Kentucky and Tennessee for its new EV plants, despite Michigan still being a Right to Work for Less state at that time. Democrats quickly erased that Republican Rick Snyder law and gave power back to workers. And since then, we've seen the UAW win some significant victories in its showdown with the big three automakers. And now we're seeing the UAW gain even more power and strength after its earth-shattering victory to unionize a Volkswagen plant in Tennessee. Over 73% of the workers at that plant voted to unionize, making it the first time workers at a foreign-owned auto plant in the South have unionized, according to The Guardian. Up next, 5,000 workers at a Mercedes plant in Alabama will vote to unionize in May. I mean, talk about sending shockwaves to the corporate community. And now, not only is the business community worried in the South, but you've got a bunch of Southern governors, Southern Republican governors, denouncing UAW as a special interest group bent on destroying jobs in their states. To which UAW President Sean Fain replied in The Guardian that the governors were the ones wrecking the economy because they don't care about working people having a decent wage. It's working class people who move the economy. And Sean Fain added that the economy is the economy of the billionaire class and the corporate class, where they take all the profits and the workers get left behind. I'm telling you what, Democrats, please put Sean Fain out there as much as possible and give him a significant spot at the convention later on this summer. The people are on to the games of the corporate class, and it's too bad the Republican Party, both in Michigan and in other states, refuse to fight on behalf of the working class. The people are fed up. And at least in Michigan, Democrats are trying to right some wrongs. Why won't the Republicans?
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Special thanks again to Salon's Amanda Marcotte for being on this week. Next week, I'll have a slew of things I want to talk about, including that huge recall election that's happening up in Delta County, where three MAGA extremists on the county commission are facing recalls. And one of the good people trying to oust one of those MAGA people, Kelly Van Ginhoven, will stop by again here for a few minutes to talk about what's happening there, as the election is now less than 2 weeks away. As always, I say yes, what happens nationally is indeed important, as you know, I've covered here this week, but it's what happens in our state and in our local communities that have a more immediate impact on our lives. So Kelly joins me next week. Hey, I'll be with my dad on Friday for day two of the NFL draft in downtown Detroit. The Tigers are playing earlier in the day too, so I cannot wait to be part of the craziness in the D this weekend. Until next week, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston. And hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.